From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Pamela Wu, in for Beth Ruyak. Set to appear on the ballot this November is an initiative to give Californians new privacy rights when using the internet, but not anymore. The wealthy backer of that initiative has just reached a deal with state lawmakers to tackle the problem legislatively, potentially avoiding a contentious and costly campaign fight. Meanwhile, another initiative on rent control will appear on the ballot after all. Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler joins us today to discuss these initiatives and the fate of net neutrality in this week's Capital Chat. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
A lot to talk about. Let's start with the internet privacy measure. An initiative to give Californians new privacy rights online won't go to the voters after all. What would this measure have done, and why aren't we going to see it on the ballot?
Well, first, an important clarification. It might not go to voters. It is at this point in the hands of opponents of this ballot measure, tech companies, business groups, who think the initiative is utterly far-reaching and just not good, and certainly not good for them and their bottom lines. So right now, this deal, which is in some respects a scaled-back version of the ballot measure, is a take-it-or-leave-it for opponents of this group. They can either live with this deal that was negotiated between the initiative's proponent, a San Francisco real estate developer named Alistair McTaggart, who spent millions of his own dollars gathering signatures to qualify this measure for the November ballot. So they can live with this deal that McTaggart negotiated with a couple of Democratic lawmakers, State Senator Bob Hertzberg and Assemblyman Ed Chow, or they can say, nope, we're going to take our chances this fall and hope that voters will reject the ballot measure. So we don't yet know what they're going to do. In fact, they probably don't know what they're going to do because this measure just went into print late last night on the legislature's website. So I'm sure that companies and lobbyists and experts have been spending the night and the early morning hours reviewing it. And I believe they're going to meet today and try to figure out what their response is going to be.
So it is still up in the air. Who are the parties on either side of this issue?
Well, like I said, you've got the supporters, the proponent is McTaggart, and then consumer privacy groups and consumer groups in general. I think a lot of Californians would say, look, we don't like how our data is being used online. I think you saw the backlash when Facebook had to go through its challenges and Mark Zuckerberg had to testify to Congress. On the other hand, the tech companies and business groups think that it's a fatally flawed measure, that it was written very sloppily. And I think maybe some of the effort to craft a legislative solution was to fix some of the issues that in the way that it was drafted, according to maybe opponents, but then also scale it back a little bit, maybe make it more palatable to opponents. Certainly not something they're going to like, but maybe it's something they can live with.
So how do the opponents then feel about this legislative alternative? Might they decide that they would rather take their chances with the voters in November?
Well, we'll have to see. I think that's exactly what they're trying to figure out.
All right. Meanwhile, a deal to keep the much-discussed rent control measure was not able to avoid being on the ballot. What's the latest on this topic?
Well, what we reported yesterday and this morning, which I don't believe was previously known, is that there were negotiations of a similar nature to the privacy initiative. In fact, with one of the same lawmakers, Senator Hertzberg, intended to potentially reach a deal and avoid this costly ballot fight over rent control. So let's just start at the beginning. There's a law on the books in California called Costa-Hawkins, and that law limits local city governments from having rent control. It basically says from when this law went into effect a couple decades ago that cities can't have new rent control ordinances on the books and can't have rent control on properties that were built after that. So in some cities like Oakland or San Francisco, maybe Los Angeles, where there are older properties that are subject to rent control, that's where rent control still exists, but not on the newer properties. So the effort, the measure is qualified for the November ballot to repeal Costa-Hawkins. In other words, it would then be up to local governments each individually to decide whether to increase rent control or create rent control for cities, counties that don't currently have it. There's a lot of opposition to that from not just business groups. Even some housing groups think it's a bad idea. They think it would affect some supply. Tenant groups are strongly in favor of it, and an activist named Michael Weinstein from Los Angeles, who runs the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, bankrolled this measure, and that is why right now it's set for the November ballot. That said, Weinstein had a team of policy folks and lobbyists negotiating with the California Apartment Association, and moderated by Senator Hertzberg, the last couple of weeks in May, and they were looking at a couple of issues that maybe they could reach some agreement on and avoid a rent control ballot measure. That agreement fell through, or those negotiations fell through. There never was an agreement. And so we do expect, in fact, I think it's pretty much set in stone at this point, that rent control will be on the November ballot.
I'm talking with our Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler, in this week's Capital Chat segment. Ben, let's talk about net neutrality now, the topic of some real political maneuvering at the Capitol. And I think we should engage in some explanatory journalism first. What is net neutrality?
See, and this is where it gets a little tricky for me because I'm up to date on the politics on this measure, but less so on the policy. But net neutrality has gotten a lot of attention. It was a set of regulations dealing with the internet and whether providers can slow down access to some parts of the internet for some people as opposed to others. That was created during the regulations created during the Obama administration. The Trump administration's Federal Communications Commission, FCC, rolled them back. And so there's this effort in California to come up with net neutrality here. So that measure passed the Senate in two different bills and came to an assembly committee, the Assembly Communications and Conveyance Committee, on Wednesday. And man, it was a sight to see. It's not often that a bill gets, I guess the word in legislative speak is hijacked the way that bill got on Wednesday.
So I understand that State Senator Scott Wiener introduced that bill in the legislature to protect net neutrality, or one of the bills, and that in a rather unusual development, or a hijacking development, as you would say, the Wiener bill was changed a great deal by Assemblymember Miguel Santiago of Los Angeles, and that's before it was discussed in the committee. Can you tell us what happened there?
So Santiago is the committee chair, and he and Wiener had been negotiating up until that committee hearing. They weren't able to reach a deal, and so Santiago and his committee put out some amendments to the bill the night before the committee hearing. And those were amendments on issues that AT&T, for example, was interested in seeing. Santiago says, and by the way, I should say that the phrase net neutrality may mean different things to different people. Santiago insists that the regulations that he was coming up with were intended to mirror the 2015 Obama-era regulations. Wiener believes that the regulation or the amendments that Santiago put forward gut and, in his words, eviscerate his bill. And so there was a showdown at this committee. Santiago muscled through the amendments to the bill, the hostile amendments that Wiener did not want or accept, before the hearing, or as the hearing began, before the bill came up for debate and before witnesses testified. And that's not usual, although Santiago, in a lengthy statement released just a few minutes ago, pointed out that oftentimes the process is for amendments to be taken before the hearing on a bill begins. I think that's when the amendments are accepted by the author. So in this case, they weren't accepted. Santiago called for the vote. A committee chair often gets committee members to vote the way the committee chair wants. It's kind of an unwritten rule and also has to do with the fact that, you know, the committee chair has staff and committee members often aren't able to devote the amount of time to bills that committee chairs can. So there's a fair amount of trust that happens there. And then there was this showdown for, you know, a good, I think, hour or so between supporters of the Wiener bill and opponents of the Wiener bill. I don't say supporters of net neutrality and opponents of net neutrality because I think there would be some, you know, again, net neutrality is in the eye of the beholder. So supporters and opponents of Wiener's bill. In the end, Wiener tried to withdraw his bill, but the committee passed it anyway with the amendments and kept it moving. It has another committee hearing next week in the assembly. But since then, there's been several attempts at reconciliation. Wiener and Santiago have met and talked. California Democratic Party Chair Eric Bauman released a statement yesterday saying they'd agreed to keep the conversation going and move forward. And Santiago and other members on the committee made the point, look, we want a net neutrality bill. And even if, Scott Wiener, you don't want to move your bill forward, we want to move it forward because we think this is too important not to have. So a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on, a showdown publicly, and the next thing that we will see from it comes at a committee hearing next week.
So you mentioned AT&T, and of course, this telecom giant is very influential and supports the changes. What does AT&T stand to gain from such amendments?
So Ben Bradford, our colleague on the state government beat, took a look at that in a story that we've posted at capradio.org and talks about what some of the amendments are. But one example that I'm able to get into a little bit of the policy on is zero rating. And so I happen to have an AT&T, I think it's called UVerse. So it's the opposite of Comcast's cable plan. And because I have AT&T for TV and internet, if I'm on my smartphone and I'm using the AT&T app to view my TV, it's data free. Even if I'm not on Wi-Fi, if I'm on just regular cellular data, it's not going to count toward my data charges. And that is zero rating. And this bill would, I believe, prohibit AT&T and other providers from doing that.
Mm. Now, I know that these amendments that we've been discussing are referred to as hostile amendments. And there have been notable instances of hostile amendments in the recent past upon which you've reported.
Yeah. So a couple that came to mind, which I wrote about in that same story that Ben Bradford and I put up at capradio.org, is there is an effort from the tobacco industry to kill off a bill that would have regulated e-cigarettes like other tobacco products. And that measure had passed the Senate. It was, I think, 2015. And it came to the Assembly Governmental Organization Committee. And the chairman of that committee, Assemblyman Adam Gray of Merced, put forth some amendments that in Leno's mind, basically, you know, eviscerated the bill. In fact, let me see if I can pull this up. This is Leno at the time as his bill had those amendments, and here's how he reacted to it.
I no longer believe in it. None of my sponsors believe in it. The long list of folks I shared with you before you took your vote no longer believe in it. And so I urge your no vote, but I cannot support it any longer. I disassociate myself from it. It's a very dangerous bill now.
That bill did not move forward. Unlike this week with net neutrality, the committee listened to Leno, and Leno said, I don't support my bill, so they voted no, and the bill stopped moving. But the supporters of the bill had the last laugh, because that measure became part of a package of anti-tobacco bills that passed the legislature during a special session on health care early the following year, and Jerry Brown signed it. And so that was a temporary, short-lived victory for the tobacco industry. And then one other example to share, also a short-lived victory for a big industry that opposed a measure, was when pharma succeeded in hostile amending a drug price transparency bill in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. I think that was 2016. And that measure was basically changed so much that the author didn't really know what his bill did anymore immediately after the fact, and took days to figure out what it did, and then decided not to move it forward. Well, he moved a similar bill forward the next year, and it did become law. And so we'll see if AT&T and the telecom industry has better luck with net neutrality after its successful bid in the Assembly Committee this week than the tobacco and pharmaceutical industries had in their efforts.
Really an incredible amount of intrigue happening right now at the Capitol, Ben.
It's just another week, right? You know, we just finished, we've almost just finished the state budget. There's still a couple of budget bills hanging around that are going to eventually move, I guess. But yeah, you know, and we just got through the primary election. Legislature goes on recess in a couple of weeks. I think we're all ready.
Will you get a break then?
Maybe.
We'll talk to the boss about that. That's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Ben, thanks for joining us for this week's Capitol Chat segment on Insight.
Anytime.
We have complete political coverage on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capitol Public Radio.